In Nicaragua and Iran, however, one form of tyranny promptly gave way to another. Somoza was replaced by the Sandinistas, who suspended civil liberties and established a Marxist-style dictatorship. And the Shah of Iran was replaced by a harsh theocracy presided over by the Ayatollah Khomeini. These outcomes helped to highlight a crucial principle of foreign policy, the principle of the lesser evil. This means that one should not pursue a thing that seems good if it is likely to result in something worse. A second implication of this doctrine is that one is usually justified in allying with a bad guy in order to oppose a regime that is even more terrible. The classic example of this occurred in World War II. The United States allied with a very bad man, Stalin, in order to defeat someone who was even worse and posed a greater threat at the time, Hitler. Once the principle of the lesser evil is taken into account, then many American actions in terms of toppling socialist and anti-Western forces, and also of backing third world dictators like Marcos and Pinochet, become defensible. These were measures taken to fight the Cold War. If one accepts what is today an almost universal consensus that the Soviet Union was an evil empire, then the U.S. was right to attach more importance to the fact that Marcos and Pinochet were reliably anti-Soviet than to the fact that they were autocratic thugs. A second principle crucial in understanding foreign policy is that of situational logic. Situations change, and therefore policies must be devised to deal with a particular situation at a given time. It is foolish to hold the U.S. culpable for inconsistently changing its policy when the underlying situation that justified the original policy has also changed. By this reasoning, there was nothing wrong with America supporting Saddam Hussein in the late 1970s and early 1980s when the greatest threat in the region came from Iran. So, too, America was justified during the 1980s in providing weapons to the Mujahideen, even if this group included Osama bin Laden, in order to drive the Soviet Union out of Afghanistan. Obviously, when the Cold War ended, and under new circumstances, Hussein and bin Laden emerged as the greatest threats, America shifted its focus and began to treat them more severely. Let us also remember that we know things today about Hussein and bin Laden that were not known then. We cannot fault American policymakers in the 1970s and early 80s for not possessing knowledge about Hussein and bin Laden that only became available in the 1990s. What then of the starvation of the Iraqi children? This has become a staple complaint of American leftists, and it is one that bin Laden has repeatedly raised. The fallacy of this argument is contained in its premise, that by refusing to trade with Iraq, America is to blame that Iraqi children are hungry. To see this fallacy, consider an example. I am walking down the street eating a sandwich. You approach me, give me an account of your troubles, and ask me to share my sandwich with you. For whatever reason, I decline to do so. Now, my reasons for this refusal may be good ones or bad ones. But in either case, I am not to blame for your plight. I didn't cause your hunger. So too, one can agree or disagree with America's policy of sanctions, but America is not responsible for the fact that Iraqi children are starving. The reason they are starving is that they are under the subjugation of a barbarous dictator who spends Iraq's oil revenues on his own indulgences and doesn't seem to care whether Iraqi children live or die. None of this is to excuse the blunders and mistakes that have characterized U.S. foreign policy over the decades. Unlike the old colonial powers, the British and the French, the Americans seem to have little aptitude for the nuances of international politics. Part of the problem is America's astonishing ignorance of the rest of the world. About this, the detractors of the United States are right. The critics have also played a constructive role in exposing America's misdoings. Here, each person can develop his own list. Long-standing U.S. support for a Latin despot, or the unjust internment of the Japanese in World War II, or America's reluctance to impose sanctions on South Africa's apartheid regime, There is an ongoing debate over whether the U.S. was right to drop atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. However one feels about these cases, let us concede to the critics the point that America is not always in the right. What the critics completely ignore, however, is the other side of the ledger. Twice in the 20th century, the United States saved the world, first from the Nazi threat, then from Soviet totalitarianism. After destroying Germany and Japan in World War II, America proceeded to rebuild both nations, and today they are close allies. Now the U.S. is helping Afghanistan on the path to political stability and economic development. What this tells us is that North Vietnam's misfortune was to win the war against the United States. If it had lost, it wouldn't be the impoverished country it is now, because America would have rebuilt and modernized it. Consider, too, how magnanimous the United States has been to the former Soviet Union after victory in the Cold War. And even though the United States does not have a serious military rival in the world today, America has not acted in the manner of regimes that have historically occupied this enviable position. For the most part, America is an abstaining superpower, no real interest in conquering and subjugating the rest of the world. Imagine how the Soviets would have acted if they had won the Cold War. On occasion, the U.S. intervenes to overthrow a tyrannical regime or to halt massive human rights abuses in another country, but it never stays to rule that country. In Grenada and Haiti and Bosnia, the United States got in, and then it got out. Moreover, when America does get into a war, it is supremely careful to avoid targeting civilians and to minimize collateral damage. During the military campaign against the Taliban, U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld met with theologians to make sure that America's actions were in strict conformity with just war principles. And even as America bombed the Taliban's infrastructure and hideouts, its planes dropped rations of food to avert hardship and starvation of Afghan civilians. What other country does these things? Jean Kirkpatrick once said, "Americans need to face the truth about themselves, no matter how pleasant it is." The reason that many Americans don't feel this way is that they judge themselves by a higher standard than anyone else. Americans are a self-scrutinizing people. Even if they have acted well in a given situation, they are always ready to examine whether they could have acted better. At some subliminal level, everybody knows this. Thus, if the Chinese, the Arabs, or the sub-Saharan Africans slaughter 10,000 of their own people, the world utters a collective sigh and resumes its normal business. We sadly expect the Chinese, the Arabs, and the sub-Saharan Africans to do these things. By contrast, if America, in the middle of a war, accidentally bombs a school or a hospital and kills 200 civilians, there is an immediate uproar, and an investigation is launched. What all this demonstrates, of course, is America's evident moral superiority. The moral superiority of America is vehemently denied in three camps: among leftist intellectuals, especially in Europe and the Third World, among American multiculturalists, and among Islamic fundamentalists. These three groups make up the Blame America First crowd. The discontent of the intellectuals seems to originate mostly from peevishness and envy. The Europeans are haunted by the knowledge that they once had an empire and directed the course of world affairs. Now they play the part of assistant coach on America's team. This subservient role is very annoying, especially given the high opinion that most European intellectuals have of themselves. For third world intellectuals, it is simply unbearable to acknowledge how good America is, because then they are forced to admit how bad their own countries are. After one of my lectures, a graduate student from Sri Lanka came up to me and protested, "I cannot agree with what you are saying, because if you are right, then I don't know what to say to people in my country. Am I supposed to tell my people that America is the best and that they are shit?"